What would you say your superpower is in all this?
The ultimate deal is that you got to just keep pushing forward. Whatever it is in front of you that you feel like you need to do.
So with the infomercials, I guess what I'm really curious about is how did you go into that?
I could bring value to the insurance industry.
Boom! Who do we have today?
Mike Watts. Thank you so much for coming on. This is Mike Watts.
So with the infomercials, I guess what I'm really curious about is how did you go into that? What was that framework like that helped ensure you to have success?
That's the longest question you've ever heard, but
no,
if
it's not.
You could talk about that, it'd be awesome.
It's spot on. You know, it's...
So a lot of agents buy internet leads, you know? And so you're buying internet leads that these companies sell to 7-8 agents.
Well, it's just understanding that it's not selling, it's delivering value. I can bring value to the insurance industry.
Buckle up. It's the Insurance Dudes Podcast.
What's up?
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm just wishing I had a cool living room, or at least a virtual. I can't even afford the virtual one, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Things are tight. It's a bootstrap. This is the way it is around here.
It is.
It is. By the way, do you know what living room from a 90s sitcom I'm sitting in? I think it was 90s. It had to be early 90s.
Maybe late 80s.
Maybe.
I don't know. I really don't know. Jefferson's. That's earlier than that.
Close-ish.
Will Smith? I feel like he's been in that room.
You know what? It is... The dad was a cop in another movie, Die Hard.
Oh, Martin Lawrence?
Nope.
No, I'm just showing my movies here. Not a strong suit.
Yeah.
It was on Friday nights, TGI Fridays.
What years you said? Late 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Early 90s.
Did I do that?
There you go. That was an amazing impression. Family Matters. Remember that?
Family Matters. Remember Urkel?
Oh, Family Matters, yeah. I think that came on. I had some things I had to do, that was the structure where I grew up, and it was always the same time, and there was no DVR back then, so I kind of missed certain swaths of shows.
Yeah. That was during Friday nights, TGIF. That was a good one, man. I like that one.
Yep. Good time.
Good time.
Urkel went to my high school.
Did he really?
How about that? Yep. Yes.
Wow. Way after Craig.
Well, yeah. I think he was in my sister's grade.
Don't play.
You don't play, Mr. Jason.
Well, cool, Mike. Thank you so much for coming on. This is Mike Watts. It is awesome to have you. Not from the insurance world, but an entrepreneur, and has a lot of different things going, and some marketing and just some awesome stuff. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are. And I do want to touch on that Lollapalooza, too. That's an important piece.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was a memory. I got the shirt. I still have the shirt. Awesome. So I've just, you know, I've always wanted to have extra money. And that started early for me, like middle school. So I'd have my mom take me to Sam's Club, buy the box of Blow Pops and Now and Laters, and sold them out of my backpack, you know, during break.
Oh, nice.
High school. I think probably thought about it later. My most embarrassing moment in high school would have been, just trying to apply that across the line, and I got burned. You know, sometimes being an entrepreneur, you're just not sure where the lines are at. You're just trying to create value. And so seniors could go to lunch. Juniors could not go to lunch off campus, right? That's a big deal in high school.
Yeah. So
having a senior ID all of a sudden became quite valuable. And
access
to a copier and laminating equipment. And they really didn't have some pretty high security stuff back then. We got away with it for a while. More first, it started with me and my friends, and then we sold a few, and then those people were stupid and got caught. So that ended up that was an in-school suspension. So, you know, I started as a convict in high school, I guess.
There you go. Well, better to get in trouble in high school than later.
Right, yeah. So as it went on, I did the traditional thing. I went to college. You know, I worked all through school, but still left with a ton of debt. And I took a corporate job, worked in, I was an engineer first and then public relations because I like to talk so much. So they put me, you know, on a microphone. And eventually, though, I ran into the glass ceiling, you know, in my corporate cubicle and some great people there, friends today. But for me, it was like being trapped in a cage. And it wasn't even like a glass ceiling there. I was in the 33rd floor of this building and it was a concrete ceiling. You know, I could see it right there. And I couldn't go above that floor until I got to a certain age, had been there a certain amount of time, kissed the right people's butts, you know, like played the game. And for me, I was just like, I need more because my wife was about to have our first child. And that's really when it all changed for me. When I had a son, I had something bigger than me. I was finally humbled. And I should have been when I got married, but figured it all out and really started putting family first. And part of the goal was to be able to not have two sources of income from two people. We could have two sources of income from one person or from a collective effort. And so me and her started going to Home and Garden shows and just hustling on the weekends and trying to make an extra buck and spend every weekend, every vacation day, every sick day, and a couple extra days hustling on the side, making more money while still doing a great job at my corporate job. But I built it up. You know, when people talk about making the leap to be an entrepreneur, it's not like doesn't always have to be it's not an overnight thing, right? It's better to be a gradual thing and more of a muscle that you exercise. You don't just say, I'm going to run a marathon. You say, I'm going to start jogging around the block. I'm going to get started. So I did that and eventually left corporate America, started my first full-time entrepreneurial gig with three kids, left health insurance, pension, turned it all in, walked away. Because I finally found a product that was patented that I could protect. And I licensed the intellectual property, gave it a brand name, and started making videos. We put it on TV, did the infomercial thing. I learned how to do infomercials. And then we partnered with the largest distributor in the industry. And it was a cool story behind that. But in the end, they purchased our company years later. And my family and friends that invested with me had some amazing returns, and as did we. We exited that for over $6 million.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
And then at that point, I was like, how do I do this again? And so then I've had two more startups since that day.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you have an exit strategy like that to from the beginning?
No.
It was going to be like...
trying to make money.
Yeah. Okay. And talk about that journey. Like, I love the leaving the corporate world to follow the dream story.
Right.
And, you know, in the insurance world, a lot of our listeners have left the corporate world. You know, I've been in the corporate world. Jason wasn't. And it's like, it's just, you know, everybody comes from different things.
Group hug to the corporate world, ex-corporate
yeah,
world.
But, yeah. But it's like, well, and I was a financial advisor at Merrill Lynch. So it's, you know, kind of corporate, but also sales guy.
Sure.
Right. And so these different, everybody comes from these different places. And there's that moment where you're trying to amass something. So if something goes wrong, you're not in trouble, but at the same time and jump. And that moment that you execute is terrifying for a lot of people. And we've seen so many people do it to jump into this business also. Yep. So talk about, that's the longest question you've ever heard, but
no,
if
not.
You could talk about that, it'd be awesome.
It's spot on. You know, it's so much of success is defined by your personal relationship with fear. So you just have to understand that you should lean into fear. If you lean towards the fear, the things that make you uncomfortable, it's because it's part of your destiny. And so, you know, you just got to keep being willing to step forward in faith in whatever it is that you believe, right? Yeah. So if you believe that your product has value and a place in the market and it will benefit people's lives, whether it's a physical product, you know, like our love handle, plug the love handle.
Mm.
Or it's an idea, right? Or it's a secure, it's a business like you guys, insurance, right? Well, that's a value to me, right? You're spreading risk out for me so that I don't have to be exposed to certain things that could completely derail me, right? Some sort of event. It's event insurance, really. So for me, it's understanding that the biggest risk of all is to do nothing.
Right.
That's true, yep. too. So you get locked in unhappiness, right? Trapped in the...
Yeah. And I don't think everybody's wired this way. I'm just speaking to people that might, you know, it might resonate yeah. with. But for sure. me, it's always been I've had a drive. Nobody outworks me.
Yeah.
And so I just have that drive. I love it. You know, it doesn't feel like work, but I'm here 12 hours, you know, easily a day. I left here at 10 last night, you know, just getting, yeah. get, you know, when you've got a great product that does, like, we make our stuff in America. So I'm not only running a facility that designs and develops our product, but we're actually making it here and printing it and design. Well, what's cool about that structure is that now we can react to the immediate demand and need of the market, right? So we just created this collection. This collection's about, you watch, there's some retailers that are everywhere that want to have our message about the racial equality right now is the one I'm going to stand by all the way through. And it's about love. And love is the ultimate binding factor, right? And humility. Yeah. And that's what I want my company to be. And that's what I've always wanted to be. So it's the perfect moment in time. And so we've created this collection that's a fundraiser to support Black education. And now as part of that in the store is going to go to retail. Now, that was only possible because I'm in the game and I've invested to overtime. There's nothing fast. I've been this 20 years now, full-time entrepreneur and well, on the side for 20 years and full-time for 15. Our team's 26. I just hired 27 today. So,
wow, nice.
That's awesome.
Half production and half in like either sales and marketing or graphic design or admin or shipping and fulfillment or warehouse or inventory or something like that. So,
you know, so you touched on something earlier. You were talking how when you with your first product, how you got into infomercials.
Yeah,
which I love. So we're in sales, and I always like when it comes to sales, I always reference infomercials because when somebody comes out with a product and they're about to launch on TV, I literally tell my staff this is that there's so many millions of dollars being backed by this. It's got to be perfect. The pitch has to be perfect. Yep. Otherwise, why would people invest the kind of money that it takes to do these infomercials and buy out? What do you have to buy out? Like a year of advertising on TV or
it's a unique little animal. It essentially sustains on remnant ads, the ones that aren't sold. They just have a standing bid for available space last second at a 10% rate, you know? So you work with these companies that buy remnant media and then they'll place you and they try to place you where you want, but you might book $5,000 in, you know, ads for the week. 3,000 of them will actually deploy. Right. You're just placing $5,000 max worth of bets on that somebody will have extra space. That's years ago. Now, I'm a believer now the infomercial market is dead. The new infomercial is Instagram. The new infomercial is in your hand. Right. It's not on TV. So it's going to become more and more organic into the influencer eventually.
Yeah. Love it.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I'm so curious about the infomercial world because I do know that like now you know you have your you look at a lot of the funnels on you know that people are running on Facebook and stuff and it's very similar, at least the sales process, the framework, right. So with the infomercials, I guess what I'm really curious about is how did you go into that? What was that framework like that help ensure you to have success and right. then you know, you can relate that to today.
Yeah, no, it was a great story. And I look back as one of the better decisions that I've made. And it's, again, it's coming from a place of humility as you approach something and understanding you don't know it, but you're willing to figure it out. Right.
Yep.
And so the best way to figure it out is to go find the guy that knows it the best. And I found this guy, he was one of the guys, right? There's probably a lot of them, I found a guy that was an expert in this business. And of course, he pitched me on some, well, I'll just acquire it and I'll put it on TV. No. I'm going to have control and I'm going to learn how to do this. And I'll tell you what, you teach me how to do it. You would just introduce me to, because you need a person to buy the media. You need a fulfillment center. You need a call center. And you need, then there's actually, you have to actually pay to have the tapes physically delivered from one studio to another in different beta or whatever format. That might not be the case today, but it was not that long ago.
Yeah, and, that's crazy.
Yeah, so there's all these pieces. So he taught me, put us on conference calls, introduced me, negotiated rates, all that stuff for 1% of our program for a year. And so, yeah, and we crushed it, and we wrote, stroked him some big checks. But I did it right the first time. I didn't make mistakes with big money, and I didn't let time go by. So, you know, it's about creating win-win propositions all the way through. Is that's the formula for success. If you don't, if the other person doesn't also feel like they're winning in any transaction, then you're never going to repeat it. So,
right.
I think you 100% won for 1%, though. I mean, Stripe takes 2.5% just without really delivering anything, right? So that is pretty amazing.
That but is we amazing. We did like $3 million in sales that year too. So
great.
That's awesome.
It's like the precept to the funnel. The thing that's interesting is you didn't have real-time data. Like we can make decisions now. Oh, this subject has a better open rate on the email or all these different things that you're trying to drive traffic in. Like how did you know besides the sales, right? I mean, I guess that's an important indicator.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, on the TV piece, you did get reports, hourly reports if you wanted them. Okay. And they would give you like the viewer, like you would know your number, the numbers you care about is what the cost was to close the deal. Like just your ratio, the CPO, or they had different acronyms back then, but ultimately what did it cost to get that order? And, you know, your hard cost too. So, you know, where you needed to be above a 13 or above a 14, you know, and, you know, if you would see on Fox or whatever, you'd be crushing it. But then, you know, you would think NASCAR channel would be your audience because we sold at the time it was a weed eater head. I haven't talked about this, but it was an aftermarket trimmer head called the Pivot Trim. And it was allow you to like run your weed eater into a chain link fence and the line would never break. And it was super easy to load.
Oh, wow.
It was
I remember that. Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. And then we would cut. And I was like, what are the crazy, like I was thinking Ginsu knife, right? Like I wanted to have, where they cut the steel can.
Yes.
And they cut the tomato.
Oh, I love that.
Right? I wanted to have that with my product. And so I was like, yeah. I was at Home Depot with my cart throwing in sheets of metal and pieces of wood and wonder if I can cut that in half. And then I would put it in a vise and try to like cut it in half. And that's how we came up with the demo for the, like it cuts through sheet metal, it cuts through wood, and then it cuts your grass.
Yes.
And it, was, love it really worked well. And people resonated with that. Helped write the script, and we shot it all in a day, and I was the guy out there cutting the grass the whole time. And so we'd always, anytime they had to buy me a beer, anytime we were at the place if my commercial came on, you know, somebody had to buy me a beer. So oh,
that's awesome. Did you learn that sales process from any gurus of the time that were doing infomercials?
No, I really didn't run into any gurus. You know, there was some people I was doing trade shows. And so there was the people there that would have the As Seen on TV products. So I talked to them and said, okay, hey, you know, tell me about this industry. You know, get to know them a little bit. And then that's how you meet the right people. You know, you can figure out who it is that knows the space and then say, look, you know, let's make some money together and figure out a way to make value. And that's the same way it worked out with Damon John too.
Yeah. And did you kind of get obsessed with that process during that period of time? That did you watch a lot of infomercials? Did you watch like the old Ronco stuff or Billy Mays?
No, Robin, Billy Mays, over that too.
Mm-hmm. Sure, Anthony Sullivan, those guys, the pitch guys.
Yeah.
That was me at the trade show. See, that was me. Like I identified with those guys. Look, you always painted the best picture you could paint, right? But I wasn't purposely deceitful with people. But I was a good salesman, and I really didn't take no for an answer. And my wife's right here to swipe your credit card. My 3-year-old is underneath the table here watching VeggieTales. Like,
yeah.
Support a guy, you know? And that's, we were selling magic crystals. I was like Jack and the Beanstalk back then because we were selling these crystals that mix with water and they soak up. It became Orbeez and all that stuff too later. Wow. But we were selling that stuff back then for putting in potted plants and for growing flowers out of and things like that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That whole world, I'll never forget growing up. Just the anytime I stayed up, those infomercials, I loved them.
Yeah.
I would just watch them. Like, gosh, who's the Jack Lane and like just all the dudes with the.
Yeah.
Gosh, all the late night stuff. I loved the process of it. What an interesting, and I never really correlated it until I got older. That this is sales. Like, it's not, yeah, they're doing something on TV, but like, it's the thought process. It's all the same. It's like this psychological game, and it's super interesting to me.
Well, I mean, you're sitting there watching whatever, and this thing pops on, and you had no, you were not waking up today thinking, I'm going to buy some crystals, right? And all of a sudden, you're like, at the end of it, you're like, holy crap, I need to get those. They're freaking awesome. Right. I mean, and it's like taking somebody from no intent at all to sold. I mean, it's remarkable. And, you know, like we can actually tie this into what we do, which is, you know, a lot of agents buy internet leads, you know, and so you're buying internet leads that these companies sell to 7-8 agents, right? So 8 agents are calling this guy at the same time, and it's a funnel. And then it's whoever has the best process, be it how many calls and, you know, the flow, are there emails, are there texts, whatever, all of those things happening. And then the pitch, right? If the pitch isn't tight, forget it. You know, they just talk to 6 other people. And so it's the same thing. And all of this is a science. And you talking about this even makes it more clear how important it is to have all these things tied up when you're making those calls.
Yep. And the sad thing about the whole infomercial space is that people saw those ads, right? And so every dreamer that, hey, or have a great invention or think they have a great invention, they're like, oh, I want to have my product on TV. And the bad part was that there's a lot of like carnivorous companies out there that are after that dream, and they'll sell you an infomercial for $13,000, right? We've all probably been pitched that $13,000, $17,000 production fee or whatever. I know that people, I chastise those people, and don't ever call me because you're taking advantage of people that are cashing their 401k and you're just producing them a junk commercial and putting it on a channel that'll never be seen, just taking their money. And they do this and they've been out there. Anyway, that's an anger point for me. But the industry itself, it's got to be a magic combination of things to work, right? So I think that the world we live in now, and the big deal is, right, imagine if you could only do cold ads.
Right.
That's essentially what we had. You didn't have enough data to know nothing, you know?
Right.
So you just were shooting, but everybody was, so it kind of was fair.
Yeah. Well, because now you can target so well. I mean, not as well as you could before the trials at the Congress and everything. But now, like, you can target pretty well. You have a pretty good idea of who you're hitting with an ad. And it's so interesting that now, but everybody else does too. So if I like whatever, T-shirt X, everybody's going to hit me with that because I'm the buyer for that. So I don't know. It's interesting how it, you know, comes around,
right? And probably then, now it's even more important to have a great product because now people are get to be pickier and pickier, right?
Yeah, and they see more and more of the same type of stuff that's geared towards them. You still have to, you know, build that value,
right?
You know, create that emotional connection in the same way that they did in infomercials and everything else. It's all the same. It's really human nature, right? It's the same. It doesn't matter what medium it was in what year, but it's all the same. Like sales is always going to be the same.
Well, it's just understanding that it's not selling. It's delivering value. And if you're delivering value, then people want you around. If you're selling them, they don't want you around. I don't want any sales. If somebody's going to come to me and offer me, when I walk up to somebody and say, hey, I can put a handle on your phone. They're like, what? And you're like, yeah, look at that. You're going to be able to hold your beer in your phone in one hand, right? I have literally paddled out and surfed with my phone in my hand. Like, it's that strong. And you say, now that's going to add that amount of value to you every day, all day. And they're like, wow, that's amazing. You know, the fact that I can manufacture it for what I can manufacture it for in the USA is irrelevant, right?
Right.
So that's one of the big factors when it comes to a product, because typically to market, there's a lot of different ways to get there. That media was expensive. Going through a distributor is expensive. Doing business directly with a retailer, also expensive. Like, everything has a cost. And so the more delta that you have and the more layers you can get through, I mean, a lot of times it's a currency issue, right? So if I'm trying to sell and the dollar's so strong, it's hard for me to export because they're having to pay in dollars, you know? And so there's just a lot of different reasons that the bigger the delta you can get and the distance between your cost of goods and what the actual value is to the consumer is so important.
Yeah, people love to buy. They hate to be sold, right?
Mm-hmm.
What? When did you realize that? And what was the pivotal point in that?
I think just putting the hours in for me, like at the show.
Yeah.
I think I learned. I mean, my first job was in the mall selling baseball cards, transacting, buying and selling baseball cards for the owner. So I was like a stock trader. That's the way I saw it, you know. And so that was a really cool job, but it put me in the sales mindset right away and financial trend, looking at profit and things like that right away. And I, you know, it was only recently that I sort of looked back and remembered that moment, as that's when I got that real bug that I wanted to be the owner. You know, I wanted to be the guy cashing those checks because I'm seeing them. And then, you know, that guy eventually had a sports paraphernalia store. And then down the way, he put in a athlete's foot. And I was only 16 at the time, but I was manager. On my 17th birthday, it opened. I was manager of the store. Every employee was older than me. And, you know,
that's awesome.
And again, now I'm in a shoe store. It's all commission based. You know, now I'm like, even as a manager, I get more commission. We had the best performing store because I wanted to make the money. And I was happy with an environment where I got paid for the amount of effort I put in. I was very satisfying to me. And then I went and worked in the plants. I just worked some terrible jobs just to say I did it. Just to have been through the grind of it, like digging tunnels and putting up scaffolds and chemical plants and all kinds of crazy stuff. But the ultimate deal is that you got to just keep pushing forward, whatever it is in front of you that you feel like you need to do to achieve your goal. And if you don't have a goal, stop everything and go write some goals down.
Love it. And so you started in the gardening space, and I mean, your team's huge now, and I know you're you know, you're doing the love handle now, right? Which is awesome. But like, can you talk about between those times and like some of the failures and like some of the best learning lessons and how did you get here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you a story about a failure that's pretty interesting because there's been a lot of them, and that's the best thing. And I'll tell you categorically, failure is your friend. And again, it's like fear and failure. How's your relationship with those things? You got to work on that. But, you know, we had, I came off of the infomercial thing and my ego was like an elephant. You know,
I bet.
I was pretty sure I was Midas touched. My next product, I'm putting it on TV and I'm going to make a bunch of money with it. And that's how we started Love Handle. That was my vision. I found out about the product on a Friday from a friend. By Saturday, I was laying on the couch with my phone above my head going, this is pretty cool. On Monday, I'm on a flight to go meet the inventor. And by that Friday, we had a deal put together. Because I saw
Wow.
it, said, that's it. That's the thing I've been looking for. And I knew it, and I moved on it strong. And it cost me a lot because he knew he had something great. But it's been the best partnership. I mean, we still work very closely with him today. And you should see the new product we're about to launch. Oh, my God. But the cool thing is that now we're both in our strength, right? He's the type that likes to create and develop, and I'm more of the sales guy, right? And like, you know, I'm just trying to add value to the world, and he's got the best way to do it. So it's just neat to see all that kind of come together, and it's been a crazy journey, but I think that we're really kind of just getting started here.
I love that.
When was that? When did you start? When did you, how long has that been?
We just crossed our 6-year mark.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And how do you see it going into the future?
Well, really well. Because it was funny when we started it, we've all seen that there's a couple different things you can stick on your phone, right? We'll say that.
Yeah.
And, so we all kind of, there was a couple of us, two of us that came on the market at the same time, and they're the market leader and we're not, right? And their product went straight viral. They have a great company, a great team, great owner, great inventor, love those guys. But, for me, I've always been like, well, I felt like my product, at least for some people, would be a superior choice. Right. Because you could just relax and hold your phone. So I've always just kind of held my game, knowing that at some point the market's going to figure this out, that that this is a better product. And so in the meantime, we kept all our focus in developing automation equipment. We worked with the inventor and we designed and built our own automation equipment to be able to make our product here. It's all built with 80/20 parts and Arduino circuits and, you know, all kinds of stuff that I can't run. He built it, brought it down here. And now these producers, we can produce 50,000 custom love handles in packaging every day.
Wow.
In any design. And we're about to have to increase that because, like I said, there's some pretty exciting things. And so they actually became number 2 on the Fortune 5000 last year. So, I think they're probably over 300 million in sales. And then I think they're going public. So with a pretty strong valuation. So credit to them, but a credit to the fact that it's a massive dump of value to the market to give people a way to hang on to the thing that's so important to hang on to all day long. And so the people that have our product already know. The people that don't will know at some point. Whether it's my product or another one, it's like wheels on a suitcase. Like people don't buy suitcases with no wheels anymore, do they?
No. Can you imagine dragging a suitcase around?
Right.
Like an animal.
Right. I was just thinking about that. I was watching some sort of sales thing, and a business dude with a suit brought in one of those old square briefcases, and I was like, oh yeah, people used to have those.
Right. Yeah, we've been watching Mad Men. They're all carrying their stuff. I'm like, oh
yeah, so
I just need some wheels, man.
We're such pansies now, huh?
So,
those were dudes.
So what about other projects? You mentioned that you may be doing you're doing something else.
Yeah, I've got one other product. It's really cool. I'm a tree lover. So this one I licensed in the gap between when I sold the Pivot Trim company. And by the way, you can still buy a Pivot Trim at, I think, Home Depot, Walmart, and Lowe's. But it doesn't help me, but it's a great product. But this one we call the Root Anchor. And it's what it is when they plant a tree. You're not really planting a tree. People say plant a tree. What you're doing, you're transplanting a tree, right? And you're moving it from some environment, whether it's grown in a pot or grown in the ground and dug out, it's being moved. It's like breaking a leg that you got to reset, right? Which is why they put the poles and wires up. But think about this. How do you hold a fishing pole? Right at the bottom, right?
At the base, yeah.
Base, so that it can flex. Why are we holding the trees in the center? It doesn't make any sense. It's not the way God designed it. So we have a patent on an underground staking system called the Root Anchor that will pin the root ball, which is like the socket to the arm, into the earth. So the tree can do what it wants. Hurricane, doesn't matter. It always comes back straight. And kids can't run into it. It's just better for the tree. It's made from pig iron, just rebar. So it's got to be strong. But it'll just rust away. So
it just rusts and then eventually just disappears.
There's iron in it. Yep. And even if it doesn't, the trees are very able to encapsulate things like that, especially if it becomes part of the anchoring system and actually can just continue to add anchor back to the tree. So,
wow. Yeah. That's so cool.
Come up with it?
No, I licensed that one too. Oh, okay. I speak at the Houston Inventors Association here every year, once a year. And I go up sometimes too. Anyway, I met some people there, and this lady had an amazing invention, and I still run that one today. It really doesn't get the attention it should because I kind of only do one thing well at a time. So unfortunately, it's a bit suffering. Yeah.
Yep.
It is.
What would you say your superpower is in all this? You personally.
Just a unwavering persistence to succeed.
Nice.
Without the fear of failure, you don't care if it. You're like, you're not afraid.
No, that's it. I'm not afraid. And that's burned me a bunch of times. So the end of that story that I totally rambled away from earlier, sorry, buddy, was that we ended up buying too much of the love handle in the beginning because my ego was too big, right? I said, give me $500,000 worth of product out of China. I put this on TV, right? Well, it was between that and the TV ads and everything. And like, oh, yeah, we pulled a big line of credit because we had all this credit with the bank. And like, we're starting with this. Well, then the Chinese totally messed it up. And they used cheap glue and the elastic just pulled right out. And we had to throw it away, you know, push it into the dump. $500,000.
$500,000. Dang.
Well, it might have had the coronavirus.
So it's possible.
I don't know. Can I say that? I don't know if I can say that.
Well, we do it. We do it. It's a Wuhan bump now. So.
Oh, man. That is crazy. That had to hurt, right? Because come off that big wave of just crushing it. And then your first swing at your new thing.
Yeah. Well, it was very humbling. And financially, and still to this day, we have that line of credit sitting there and like, or not paid off. But at the end of the day, it's like, just say, okay, well, that happened. There was a lawsuit that happened, which seems to always happen. So expect that, you know, and just got to get through these kind of hurdles. And just, if you don't give up, life will yield to you. Right. You know, you guys probably know the book, but it's one of those things that you just got to keep at it and keep learning. And if you like learning and you don't mind work, then you'll be okay.
Yeah. You gotta push on because, everybody goes through failures, especially when you put yourself out there. I mean, the number of bombs that we had in this and like, didn't know what we were doing. And, you know, now we're almost 200 episodes in and it just, it's like, you got to stick with it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks. And then, and you get the haters and, you know, and all that, and you know, something's going right. Right. When these things start to happen.
That's exactly, you nailed it. That's 100% right. And you know, it's not overnight, right? This didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. It's just this, it's not about what I do this day. And in fact, a little bit of the previous podcast I heard was talking about that, was about how it's just this cumulative, you take a little step here and it's not about the salad or you eat a cheeseburger or whatever. Like, it's about the accumulation of that over time. And the fact that I'm on my Peloton every morning, pretty much, just trying to get my workout. I've got a routine. I start my day right. And the first thing I do is get on my knees and I pray and I thank God that I got another day. And if you start every day like that, then everything else is just on top, right? You're like, wow, here we go. And it's, you're doing yourself a favor by putting yourself in that humble position early and then thinking about the things you're thankful for, thinking about the people you love, and then starting your day methodically by taking care of your body, taking on the right, nutrients, and then exercise and letting your mind kind of warm up, think about like an engine, and then go after the day with just a few objectives and then just get those things done and then learn, So, and then figure out where you're not good and put people in those positions.
It's so, funny. Like the thing that you just said was almost verbatim what Bradley, we just had an interview with Bradley.
A man.
Yeah. Dude, same thing.
Really? He must be copying me, Brad. That's my, if you're watching, Brad, that's my material.
It's so cool, though. I mean, I think that, and I used to have a solid morning routine. And since this whole deal, it's
this sounds like excuses, Mr. Jason.
It hasn't been as solid, and I am rebuilding it. But it really does go to show. Like, I mean, I can see a difference. When I get on a routine, I can definitely see a difference. And now I'm almost there. But before I was like unwavering, literally like a machine, and it.
Well, we all go through cycles. I mean, that's you got to be gracious with yourself. Look, we're all just like, we're we're driving broken cars here with fogged up windows, and we're doing the best we can. You know, you just got to keep your foot on the gas and then look right, just right in front of you, because that's the only place you can really see.
Yep.
Yeah. It is cyclical. It's crazy. Cause as soon as you don't go a couple days in a row, like if you didn't hop on that Peloton, it's done, it's over, you know? And I ride outside, I'm on a bike, and and I was Orange Theory, like, it's, you know, like just then the whole thing, it like shut down. So I'm like, what am I going to do? And I look at the bike that I haven't ridden forever. I'm like, get back out there. And I'm back into it. It's like every morning at 5 a.m. get up and do 20 miles at least. And it's like, man, the difference in how you feel and, you know, just being out there, you clear your mind. And Mr. Jason, you've got to do it. Come on, get out there.
I know. Actually, I go on.
You can paddle out.
And we can't do it every day. So I have four kids and babies. So now we're starting to do walks in the morning, every morning. And it's like, dude, when we're, yeah, if we don't skip that, we're awesome. Like, I really like that. It's such a cool thing. But, you know, it doesn't always work out with babies and no sleep.
You got to do what you do. You're ground zero right now. So all is forgiven.
But it's cool. Well, dude, thank you so much. I mean, I'd like to kind of bring it back a little bit to sales. And I think that one of the biggest themes that you've had is that you're just really resilient through everything that you've done. And it's like not stop. We always talk about with our salespeople, you hear 90% no's. Like when we call people, I mean, everybody says no.
Right.
But then you got to, you know, overcome those no's, try to convert those no's. But I mean, a lot of times you hear a lot of no's. I mean, you hear in sales in general, you're going to hear way more no's than yeses. Sure. Right. Yeah. And I'm sure you have heard, you know, a lot more no's than yeses.
So, yeah. And again, that's the same. When you hear a no, again, that's that fear, rejection, no's in that category. And what's your relationship with no? Like, do you hear not now? Maybe. No, you know, or you just like, you know, and it's important. Like most people need, I mean, you guys know this in digital marketing, right? You got to hit people multiple times. Yeah. So maybe it's six no's to a yes, and that's just normal. Right. But if you kind of have that mindset at the beginning that it's a not now, not now, not now, not now. Hey, I'm ready.
Yeah.
It's maybe more like that. How about we build the relationship, add value, you know, show them that you are empathetic with them and that you understand their business. Like, cause they don't want to buy insurance. Nobody wants to buy insurance.
Nobody wants to buy insurance. Nobody wants
to talk about it. No.
Because that's not what you're selling.
Right.
What you're selling is peace of mind. You're selling, you know, risk abatement. You're selling, you know, smart business practices. Like, you just got to change the language to say, we offer these values to your business. Was done through an insurance policy. That's the vehicle, but this is the value that we're delivering to you. And then keep that messaging going in as personal of a way as you can. I assume most of you guys probably have personal relationships, and that might be just by email or, you know, why not add, like there's some, just try to get creative. You don't have to, if there's seven guys pitching the same list, you only have to be 10% better than everybody else. You don't have to be double better, right? You just have to be 10% better. And you can do that. Why don't you start those video recording messages instead of doing like everybody else does? Take a video recording, say their name, tell them you understand what business they're in and that you think you can help them, and send it in a video, and nobody else will do that.
Yep.
Right. Now you have, now you've got a winning defining factor. So you just kind of keep doing those types of things to just make yourself a little bit better than everybody else, and you'll get all the business. So
I love that. Mike Watts. Great.
Yeah. Mike Watts, bring it in the heat.
Okay, we can't talk about sales without letting me at least talk about how I can bring value to the insurance industry. We do these right here, but they come. Excuse me, one second.
You got it. You knew what my next question was. It was A, how can people get a hold of you? B,
how many people would be, how many people would be going nuts over Insurance Dudes love handles?
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the point. You know, And look, I didn't find a good example, but so basically they come on custom cards, right? So you're going to go out and you're going to give your business card to somebody when you meet them, right? Uh-huh. So instead of giving them a business card, you give them your card. Maybe we'd make them business card size too, but you do that here. And on the flip side, you've got, you know, whatever phone grip you want to give them. It might have your logo or it might just be something cool. They kind of like that better, right? Like a cool design. And you give that out and that becomes your business card. It might just say State Farm, right? And have your phone number. You really, some people put their phone number on it, but it's like the best delivery system to be a differentiator in a tangible way for like $3. So you can buy them at lovehandle.com/business. And then in the show notes, I'll hook you guys up with a coupon for the, cool. the listeners to use if they want to shop there.
And so. They're right around $3 a piece, minimum.
Yeah, they range depending on how many you buy. You know, they go down from there. So, and it includes all the design work is included. The shipping's included. Like, it's easy.
What's the minimum hardware quantity?
You can actually order for promos like $50, 50 pieces, but 250 and up, they start getting a lot more affordable.
Gotcha.
Cool. So you can actually order just one too, if you want to put your kid's name on it or something.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. That's like you could throw that in a thank you note, right? The thank you note after they buy, throw it in there and then they remember it. Right. Just anything to be different.
Yeah.
And people open letters if they have something squishy in there.
Yeah. Yep. You guys haven't read Giftology, the people listening. I'm sure you guys, that's a great book about how to do that little bit extra for people. And
Ooh. Oh, nice.
Systematize.
Giftology.
Yeah, check it out. It's a great book.
One of our listeners, Javier Najera, will definitely get that book.
All right.
He always gets the book. There's a shout out to Javier, who's also in Texas.
Cool, man. That is awesome. Love it.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah,
it was awesome. We appreciate having you.
Yeah. Anytime, we'll do it again. And y'all hit me up and sell me some of your digital marketing services too.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, yeah, for sure. Thank you, man. We will talk soon.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Have a good one, Mike.
Boom.
Boom. Boom.
Hey, you've got to check out the Insurance Dudes Inner Circle coming soon, where you get extended interviews as well as live coffee talks in our private Facebook group. Join the mailing list today at theinsurancedudespodcast.com. Hey, thanks for checking out the Insurance Dudes. Hey, please subscribe. We got some really great stuff coming out.